yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yeah, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now, walk the streets a screaming now. They brought death to our hometown, boys. Death to our hometown, boys. Death to our hometown.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. The show is Alternative Visions, where we look at the grassroots first and foremost, rather than talking heads and experts. We want to know what's going on out there. And today we're going to take a general look at what's happening in terms of protests throughout the U.S. at the grassroots. What's going on? And try to assess, you know, what is the state, the condition of the grassroots and protests? Some indications, growing interest, interesting indications of maybe there's some stirrings. So we want to talk about that today. My guests are Kevin Zeese and Margaret Flowers. Kevin, Margaret, you there?
Yes, we are.
Oh, very good. Okay, let me say a little bit about you, you two folks. You've been on the show before. Margaret is really one of the go-to people if you really want to know what's happening in healthcare in this country and Obamacare and so forth, and a whole number of other issues she's been involved in. She's a physician herself and very active in the Medicare, Protect Medicare, and other movements in the U.S. She's also the Secretary of Health for the Green Shadow Cabinet. And Kevin Zeese, no less active, Green Shadow Cabinet Attorney General, and also very active in this Against Free Trade, and a whole host of things. Kevin, you're just about everywhere and anywhere when it comes to involvement here at the grassroots.
That's because I follow Margaret around.
Yeah, okay. Right. Two very exceptional people here, and with your thumb on the pulse in so many ways, both active in Occupy in the past. Let's see, what's your website here, Resistance?
Our major website is popularresistance.org.
Right. There you go there, folks. You can find out day-to-day what's happening across the country in terms of these protests and activities. You know, this stuff does not get into the press. They pretty much do not talk about what's really happening. They sort of black out a lot of the activity. I mean, recent demonstrations, mass demonstrations in North Carolina, I hope you talk about that. Almost a virtual blackout. Also in New York, developments going on and people appearing to break with the Democratic Party, both labor folks and other folks, socialists being elected at the city council level everywhere. restaurant workers, minimum wage protests. Well, that got a little bit of a coverage because we have politicians now talking about minimum wage as a way of trying to rein in the working class here before the next election. They know they're not going to pass anything on minimum wage, but, you know, it's good talk. It's like Obama. Let's talk about inequality. Yeah, talk the talk and never walk the walk. That's the story. Because it's an election year, folks. Yeah, it's an election year. So now we're going to get a lot of this rhetoric and try to pull people in, fake them out again, as they faked us out in 2012, 2008. They didn't fake me out. I didn't vote for any of the SOBs. New York City demonstrations, XL pipeline demonstrations, opposition to free trade, pressure growing from the grassroots, labor union reform slates popping up across the country, machinists and Boeing. We had some of these Boeing workers on talking about their situation. Postal workers changes going on in their union. Going to have them on in another week or two, hopefully. Union folks breaking with the Democrats in Ohio and voting independent candidates. West Virginia toxic spills on and on. But you don't read much of that in the press, do you? Well, Kevin wrote an interesting article a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was a little longer than that, kind of summarizing some of this activity going on. And we're going to have him and Margaret talk about their observations in that regard here shortly. But, you know, it may be that in the worst times, worst conditions, people kind of hunker down. You know, they're really scared. They can't get jobs and so forth. And, you know, they kind of go into a shell here politically. Maybe now they're coming, their heads are above water a little bit, and they're looking around and saying, oh, I don't like what has gone down, and gee, things aren't that much better. And maybe some of the illusions about Obama and the Democrats are also finally being dissipated here after two elections. If you look at his approval ratings, he's on a George Bush track here. Maybe something is beginning to shift. I don't know. Let's talk about that. I've said enough. Kevin, tell us about your observations here, and Margaret as well.
You want to start, Margaret?
Run with it, wherever. What do you see as significant here in terms of grassroots protests rising?
Okay.
And what's different, if anything, in the last 6 months?
So I think if I could start out by addressing your first point, that a lot of this is not appearing in the corporate media, and that's been going on for quite a while. That's one of the main reasons that we created the website popularresistance.org, because we post a number of new articles every day showing that across the nation and around the world, people are rising up on a whole host of different issues. We wanted people to see that there's a lot going on, and also for people that are doing this activity to see that we're all part of a broader global movement to really shift from the current systems that we've been operating under that have been forced upon us, this kind of neoliberal economic model that puts, you know, more and more of our resources and services, our public goods, into the hands of private corporations so they can profit from them. And people are starting to really rise up against that and defend their public institutions and really call for real solutions to the crises that we face. So I think, you know, some of the very important areas right now, and all of them are important, but certainly there's a lot going on around ending the extreme extraction energy that we've been using. So things like mountaintop removal for coal, the fracking and the tar sands pipeline, offshore drilling. People are really, and even, you know, uranium mining and closing down nuclear power plants. A lot of this is going on around the country, and more of these groups are starting to work together and coordinate their efforts, which is really exciting. And on each of these fronts, what's also exciting is that it's not just resisting the things that we want to stop, but people are also working to put in place new systems to replace what we have that are actually better for people, better for the planet and all living beings. And so I'll let Kevin go in into more detail on this, but I just wanted to put that out there, that popularresistance.org is a movement, daily movement news website where people can see how much is going on.
Yeah, and when you come back, Margaret, I want you to maybe enlighten us on what kind of protests are emerging on this fracking problem here. I mean, fracking oil and gas is kind of the next locomotive of profit here, and we see big profits, big exports coming, and fracking is one of their darling proposals there, meaning politicians and rich folks here. They're going to make a lot of money, and they are making a lot of money off of fracking, but it's destroying the water system. People don't realize that, and unless they're living right in it. So I want you to come back and tell us, you know, what you've been reporting here on resistance.org about protests against fracking, environmental protests. But let's move on to Kevin here. Kevin.
Well, I think it's important, you know, to also step back a second and look at how movements develop. You know, everyone's very excited when Occupy happened, and you had hundreds and actually over 1,000 Occupy encampments across the country springing up out of nowhere. And in reality, that's an interesting phase of a movement. In fact, there's a really great analysis of movements called the Movement Action Plan, 8 Stages of Successful Social Movements by Bill Moyer. This is Bill Moyer, not Bill Moyer as the journalist, but Bill Moyer, political activist who at the Southern Christian, at the SCLC with Martin Luther King, he was an instructor and also involved in the poverty campaign there. So he's a longtime activist. He died in 2002, but wrote a book in 2001 that described this in detail. You can also find it as an article. But the Movement Action Plan describes the moment in Occupy as the takeoff movement. It's actually stage four of the eight stages of the successful social movements. And after the takeoff movement, the natural next step is kind of a landing where that ends. And people say the movement accomplished nothing, that it failed, it's disappeared, it's gone, it stood for nothing, it's gone and made no difference. The reality is, of course, what happened in stage four, and people begin to realize in stage five, is that the movement raised political consciousness on issues that people didn't really discuss. It was not a political agenda. The issue that I think were raised in this takeoff was the wealth divide, the unfair economy, the domination of Wall Street, the corruption of our democracy and our government by Wall Street money. And that was a major issue. And you can even see in the most recent Obama State of the Union address, he knows that issue has been raised. He had to talk about inequality in the State of the Union. And many other politicians have as well, because we've raised the issue now. But after stage five, this landing phase, comes stage six. And this is where we are right now. And this is really a very important stage because stage seven, by the way, is success. So stage six is a stage where you're developing national consensus, where there are people across the country working on a grassroots basis, person to person, communicating with each other, communicating in their neighborhoods, in their communities, in their civic organizations about these issues and developing a national consensus. The national consensus will be that the status quo is not working, that the current situation is failing us. And I think there's already a pretty strong consensus about that. Probably 65% of Americans agree. That's going to build to 75-80% during this phase. And the other thing that happens in this phase is people start to agree on, we need to try new solutions. And we'll get to a high level on that as well. So we're in this very interesting stage now where the real work of developing a movement goes. Now, during this stage, it's not always like the takeoff. It's not like this big protest moment where the whole country protests and erupts in protest at once. You'll see protests, you'll see, like you mentioned, the fracking protests. They're happening all over the country, mainly from communities that are affected by it, sometimes with organizations joining, national organizations or statewide organizations joining with those communities. You'll see the same thing with tar sands protests, the pipeline protests. Ranchers are getting involved in the pipeline protests in the middle of the country. You see the same thing with the school closings across the country. You're seeing tens of thousands of people coming out in Philadelphia and Chicago and other cities protesting the closure of schools. You're seeing in Portland and in Chicago, teachers at the college level talking about going on strikes, and in Chicago they're talking about two-day strikes. And they're doing it with student support. Same thing in Portland, doing it with student support, so it's a community-based protest about education. And so this is all part of this stage six, where we're developing this national consensus. What also happens in this stage is you recognize there are a whole series of sub-movements that are affected by the primary issue, being the unfair economy. And all these issues, from fracking to education to healthcare, are all part of the same basic cause. And so our job at this stage is to do two things. One, national consensus. Build at the local level, communicate with each other, let people see the reality and expose the myths that people like Obama and the media put out. And the second thing is to build it so these movements join together. These sub-movements, we identify 10 sub-movements that exist right now. These sub-movements need to join together in a movement of movements. And we've seen that happen recently in two areas. One, we've seen it in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, this gigantic trade agreement that was negotiated in secret now for 4 years by President Obama, secret except for the 600 corporate advisors who helped write the legislation, who advised the U.S. Trade Representative. And so it's a corporate-written trade agreement that's been negotiated in secret. But you know what's happened? The people organized and stopped it. Even though they kept it secret, we were able, through our own people-powered media and independent media, get the word out about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The corporate media didn't cover it, but we still educated each other and mobilized people. In the last 2 weeks, there have been 40,000 phone calls to Congress to say, no, we don't want the TPP, we don't want it. fast-tracked through Congress without Congress doing its job and holding hearings and taking testimony before Obama signs it. We want it exposed so people can see it. So that's been stopped. Fast track has been stopped for now, and that's because people stood up. 40,000 phone calls and more than 100,000 emails. We saw the same thing yesterday, and it's an issue that affects all of us, and that's the NSA's Dragnet spying program. Yesterday, there was a day of action, 80,000 phone calls to Congress, 160,000 emails, all in one day. People from hundreds of organizations and thousands of websites came together to support that effort. So you're seeing people acting together, crossing over these sub-movements, and joining together as a movement of movements. And that's when we start to really see our power. Now, our goal, I'll just stop at this last point, our goal at this in this stage is to develop a mass movement. A mass movement means that we have the support of supermajorities of Americans, as we do. Two-thirds of Americans support most of our positions. But more than that, we have to get people mobilized. And there's a history now of movements that shows in the last 100 years, no resistance movement has failed if it's gotten 3.5% of the public mobilized. 3.5%. And that's our goal. We want to get, 1, 2, 3% of the public mobilized and active. I think we're approaching 1%. All these movements, these sub-movements are combined together. It's getting about 800,000, getting close to 1%. But we need to get really to that, the higher levels. Not that high. 3.5% is the guaranteed victory. No movement's ever lost with that. But people have won with less. And so that's our goal, is a mass movement that puts forward issues that the vast majority of Americans agree with.
Well, that's a very interesting, good discussion topic here that we should run with a little bit, maybe. Okay, so what do you talk? You talk about stages, where the mass protests are. They're still very localized, is what you're saying, around particular issues. As you know, I've been pretty critical of this single-issue politics tendency, tradition here in the U.S. As long as you're all separated in single issues, they don't even have to divide and conquer. You've already divided yourselves. And one of the problems with single issue politics is that there's no integrating organization. And to me, it seems you have to get to that point. You're talking about the next stage of developing mass movement from these, in other words, coalescing these various single issues, which is a great next step. How you do that is critical. How you bring these groups together. And what do you do when you bring them together? Is everyone still all sort of under some kind of a loose umbrella pushing their own single issue? Or do you develop core issues that everybody keeping their single issue can also push and support? And it seems to me that you have to get to a point where you can have some kind of beginning of umbrella organization. Now, how you bring them together is interesting. Maybe you can do it all by social media. But to me, I think what really is necessary is for folks in these single issues to realize, yes, we got to get together. Divided, we're going to stay divided. To have a national convention of these single issue groups where you come together and discuss how can we go to the next level together rather than all of us pushing on our own issue with our own movement, the sub-movements, whatever you talk about, you've got to get to an organizational stage, however that looks like. It doesn't, I'm not talking about political parties necessarily, but until the activists and leaders get together in something like that and discuss how can we get to this next stage, just doing it spontaneously and saying we got to do it is not going to happen. What do you think of that?
Well, I think, you're right. One of the tasks of this phase is to actually, occupy with something that felt very organic and didn't have a lot of structure. And so in this phase, we're walking a very fine line of creating some structure, but not turning into what's called a professional opposition organization, your traditional top-down kind of nonprofit. If we want to be successful, we need to be able to continue to maintain this very diverse, creative, horizontal kind of organization structure, because what we really want to do is replace the current system with a system that's much more democratic, where people have much more participation in it, they have much more control and say over what's going on in their own communities and in the country. So we're kind of walking this line of creating some organization, but not too much. And I would say that if we had the resources, it would be wonderful to bring together all these sub-movements and really work on devising an overall strategy. But that's happening already to some extent. And what's happening is people are identifying kind of leverage points, areas where we can work together and actually make a difference. And so the TPP was a perfect example of that, because we are stopping it. It's a huge win against transnational corporate power, something that they tried to use all their resources to sneak through without us realizing it. And we're also seeing this happening at the community level. And it's interesting, when we started organizing the Occupation of Freedom Plaza back in the spring of 2011, part of that came out of discussions with activists, and everybody was kind of feeling on the same page that the traditional tools for social change were not working. Nobody wanted to go out and do a one-day march anymore and have that be ignored. People wanted to go out and do some sort of sustained action. And so that's how the occupation, the idea of, you know, inspired by what was going on around the world and in Madison, Wisconsin, and other state capitals, came to be. What we're hearing now in the activist circles and even just in communities that may not consider themselves to be, you know, terribly activist, is that people really are making these connections and wanting to work together across issues. So one campaign that's going on right now is called the Global Climate Convergence. There's information about that on our website, popularresistance.org. And it's where groups are planning actions between Earth Day and May Day to, you know, you're going to have labor people coming out on Earth Day joining with environmentalists and climate change activists and poverty rights and human rights activists around, you know, Earth Day. And on Labor Day, I mean, on May Day, you're going to see the same thing with labor and immigrants' rights activists coming together with environmentalists and others in the communities. So it's exciting to see that people are making these connections. We see a lot of communities are coming together as various groups and meeting and starting to talk about what are the problems in their communities, what are the things that they can do about that. So here in Baltimore, we have, you know, groups that are fighting back against, dirty energy that's being put into a poor community, people that are trying to create cooperatives in the community to start building up our community wealth and raise people out of poverty, give them more control over their jobs and more stable jobs. So I think there's a lot of talk. We've visited Maine and other states are doing this as well, where people are trying to define how do we redefine what the state budget looks like. Instead of looking at what revenue we have and then deciding how that's used, the people want to come together and decide what the needs are and then figure out what the revenue needs to be and where to get that in order to meet that. That's happening in, Portland, Oregon. They did the same thing, taking over their city council with their own demands of what they wanted the budget to look like and where that should come from. So, you know, organically, I think a lot of this convergence is already starting to happen.
Well, let me play devil's advocate a little bit, and that is TPP hasn't been won. It's been delayed, because it's an election year, and because Obama and others ran into some trouble here in the negotiations and pushing it forward as fast as they want, and because we got a crisis in the emerging markets now, particularly in Asia, and that's sort of disrupting the whole process as well. So, I think the grassroots has had a victory here, and that victory has culminated in Senate Majority Leader Reid sensing that they can't push this thing in an election year. But I would predict you wait until the election's over and you'll see another big push come. And then the real fight with TPP. And, you know, the other thing is, why is Francois Hollande over here from France? I'll tell you why, because the French economy is in deep trouble. And both Obama and Hollande are going to jumpstart the transatlantic partnership. That's what this meeting is really about. So this free trade thing maybe has slowed down, but it certainly is going to resurrect itself. And
there's no question that the transnational corporations will not stop for their pursuit of power and profit. There's no
question.
They've
been slowed. They haven't been stopped.
And they have. Yes, they haven't slowed. And we have to give the movement credit for that. I mean,
yes, you do.
The reason why.
Do.
The reason why.
Absolutely.
You know, this, 6 months ago, people would have predicted that TPP and Fast Track would have sailed through.
That's right.
There's virtually done. You know how many times I heard the U.S. Trade Representative that's virtually done? You know,
yep.
It's going to be approved this year. You know, they said,
right.
They always say that, of course, and then we always stop them.
Right,
so interesting.
Right.
But, you know, but the interesting thing about this is that it's an opportunity. The fact that they're going to be persistent means we have to stay organized. We have to stay mobilized. We have to continue to be a movement of movements working together. So that's an opportunity for us to continue to strengthen those bonds. And I predict that, yes, it will come back after the election. It may come back in the lame duck. It may come back in the next session. We'll see what the congressional makeup is. But I can tell you that this movement of movements is not going to go away. It's going to get stronger.
Wait a minute. Let me interrupt. Yes, I agree with you. We are kind of at a stage where all these diverse movements need to coalesce into a movement or movements. But, you know, what the hell does that really mean, movement of movements? How do you get them together? Just by
Well, that's what we're doing. You do it in three ways. First,
How do you do it without some sort of national organization?
Well, you do it in three ways. And I'm not saying there's no, there is going to be organization. It's not going to be one national organization hierarchically dominating, but there will be. There's three ways to do it. First, you do it by doing it. And that's what TPP is. It's an opportunity to actually do it. People then get used to working together. They start to talk to each other. They start to see how their issues are connected. Then you find other opportunities on another issue, like we did the NSA yesterday. And you'll find another one, maybe austerity next. You'll find issue after issue where you can unite these people and show them that they actually are a movement of movements. And if they have power, success will show them that this is the way to proceed forward. The second thing you do is you put forward a national framework, a national strategic framework. And you share that over and over again in different forums, different venues, different outlets on the media, independent media, citizen social network. You get this framework out, and you have multiple people saying it. And
Where is that national
I'd be glad to send it to you again. We've put it out multiple times, and people are buying into it. Basically, the framework is kind of what I described earlier about building this mass movement. But the framework of doing that is, first off, a common goal. The common goal is end the rule of money, take power from the corporations, give it to the people. That's the broad objective. The second part of it, so you have an objective that's common to everybody. The second thing is you have a strategy of two parallel paths. One, stop, like Margaret said, stop the machine, protest, say no to what's not we don't like, and then create the world you want, build what you want. And so that's that not new democracy, that economic democracy, the participatory budgeting, the community assemblies. You build what you want. So that's a two-track, stop the machine, create the world. And the third thing is building the mass movement. Now, you build a mass movement by attracting people from the power structure to the movement. And the people in the power structure include really all of us in various ways. It includes youth. It includes workers, labor. It includes media. It includes businesses. It includes even the military and police, the religious institutions, civil servants. These are all part of the pillars of power. As we build our movement, we intentionally target those people in those pillars of power to our movement. And as we build our movement, we weaken the pillars of power. And so we get stronger, they get weaker. So that's part of that building to that 3.5% of mobilization I told you. So that's the second thing, a national strategic framework. And we share that over and over so people start to learn it, people internalize it, and realize it exists. The third thing is we have to get people together, I think, face-to-face. I think you're 100% right that you have to have some kind of a national meeting, a convention, a workshop where people get together and start to talk about how we move to the next level. At that kind of meeting, we'll be able to talk about that strategic framework openly, debate it, discuss it, improve it. We'll be able to talk about our successes in the TPP with fighting NSA together, with stopping austerity at the local and national levels where we do. And, you know, and we can talk about our successes and our failures. What could we have done differently that would have succeeded that if we had been in movements for another issue? And so those are, to me, the three steps. It's that kind of, and as far as an organization goes, more important than an organization is getting that idea out of a common vision and a common strategy. Because when you have that, then people can act. Now, I'll tell you, if we had the resources, I would add to this, massive training programs across the country where people are trained in how to organize, how to protest, how to create the economy you want, how to work within this strategic framework, explain the strategic framework to people so people get trained and you have community organizers around the country putting it in place community to community. That would be, if we had the resources, we would do something like that. But, you know, without that, we do our best we can through the, you know, inexpensive social media, through writing, through doing radio shows and TV shows, you know, going to community meetings, traveling around the country. We do what we can do. But, you know, if we had the resources, we could do a lot more.
It seems to me that, you know, this strategic framework is important, but it has to flow from this attempt to of real grassroots groups coming together in a national convention or conference. It has to flow from that. You know, you've proposed a strategic, what's a strategic framework. I write about what should be the key proposals and demands in my books and pamphlets and so forth. But we're just, you know, part of the big, big picture. If people are to buy into a common strategic framework, they got to come together and decide themselves what that framework is. And I think it's not just a question of strategy in terms of what your demands are and how you would try to achieve them with this or that tactic and so forth, but I think part of that strategic framework has to be some sort of organizational development beyond what we have today. And only the groups coming together can decide what that is, but something has to occur organizationally to a higher level. Or else, after a conference like this, people just say, oh, these are all good ideas and so forth, and they go their own way. And I also think you need the organization because it is time. We are on the cusp of, yes, we have to have people running for office. And they're a local office to begin with, you know, local city councils and state and legislatures and so forth. That has to happen. Now, that's not the be-all and end-all of a strategy. That is part of the strategy, you know, electoral part. That has to be part of it because that's what people see. Oh, change, something different and someone different and an organization that's different is there for me to go to and ally with and join with. If people don't see an organizational point of reference, it's just one protest and another protest and so forth. And on you go and you spin your wheels. That's my view of this. We have to have a national gathering of real groups, real organizations. You know, what's going on in North Carolina? What's going on with the TPP? What's going on with the XL pipeline? Real people engaged in real conflicts and real issues. These are the groups that have to come together. And when you come together, you have to decide on what is our strategic framework, like you said, and how can we coalesce through some sort of organizational cooperation. You know, I absolutely agree with you. Occupy had a great contribution, and that was raising consciousness about the 1% and so forth. Occupy couldn't quite get this organizational coalescence here on nationwide, and as it was discussing that, in come the repression, right, from the government and wipes them out in all these different areas, a combination. It was a real threat to them, and they stopped the organizational level. But I think, you know, that was one of the lessons of Occupy, and it's a lesson of today that unless we get some sort of a national agreement of these groups, and that doesn't mean you have to give up your own single issue. No. That's what you began and you organize on. Keep pushing that. But what's the common issues that we can all now also promote, and how can we do it in an organizational manner? Anyway, okay. We need to take a break. Margaret, Kevin, take that thought, come back, and tell me why you agree, disagree with it. But let's take a quick break, and then we'll be right back, and we'll pick up that idea. Is it time to have a national convention of protest groups and talk about taking everything to another level? Okay, this is Jack Rasmus. Alternative Visions, we'll be back with after announcement here and pick up that theme. is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus, and this is Alternative Visions. I have my guests Margaret Flowers and Kevin Zeese here, and we're talking about the growing grassroots protests that seem to be emerging throughout the country here, and what's the next step? And as I had finished before the break here, throwing a little devil's advocate suggestions into the mix, that we need to somehow think about a strategy for uniting all these groups in some common program. Yes, there has to be some common basis. A common program is the start, a coming together, a national convention of sorts, where a common elements can be agreed upon. That doesn't mean you can't have your own special interest and strategy for your single issue group. Yes, you can, but a common strategy, common view is necessary coming out of this, an agreement on what tactics are acceptable or not, and a vision. You know, a longer term vision is also necessary, because you can immerse yourself in day-to-day empirical activity, but without that vision of where you want to end up, people will just engage in day-to-day activity and with no vision and end, ultimate end and objective that you want to achieve. And that includes a political vision and an economic vision. But finally, this coming together is necessary, I believe, for some sort of incipient organizational structure that only those who come together can decide on, to coordinate actions where they are common going forward. Just doing it by social media and calling your demonstration and saying, please come to mine and I'll come to yours, that kind of thing is not going to do it. And I would say that activity and strategy going forward now appropriately has to have some sort of grassroots electoral element to it as well. Electoral activity should not, cannot ever be the be-all and end-all, because it turns out to be a way of diverging grassroots energy from grassroots activity. We saw that, of course, what happened in Wisconsin, right? A lot of grassroots activity by public workers up there, and the Democratic Party and the union leadership come in, and they totally siphon it off into some phony recall election that neither of them knew had a chance, and they didn't put any effort in it anyway. And that's how you dissipate a movement. You divert it all totally into electoral activity. Well, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about local electoral activity as part of the general strategy. And you can see a tendency growing here. You know, workers in Ohio are running their own candidates. City council saying, hell with the Democratic Party. We have socialist people elected in Seattle and so forth. Maybe it's a little early with that, but it tells me, and I agree with you, Kevin, I think 75% of the people are fed up with the system and what's going on. And you don't have to tell them anymore why it's screwed and why they are getting screwed. They know. You know, and all these liberal intellectuals and so forth, you know, the Krugmans and everything, you know, they keep writing about this and that, how this is bad and this is bad, but they don't say anything. What do you do about it? Except vote for Democrats, right? People know. They're ready to do something, but they're not going to do it unless they can see something that is legitimately, potentially something they can join and take part in. You know, it's like you're organizing a union, right? You want to organize workers, they organize themselves, first of all. But someone needs to give them a vision of how you get from they know they're screwed. They know they're getting screwed by the boss, you know? They just aren't sure about how they go about it. So, you know, the task of organizing is saying, okay, here's the objective. That's what we want to get to. We want to get a union. We want to get a contract. How do we get from where you are to there? Okay, that's the strategy and the tactics that you're going to use. You know, but there has to be a vision and an ultimate objective that's clear at the end. And then you could talk about how you get from here to there. And when they're ready to organize, you don't have to tell them that they're screwed. You know, you just have to help develop clarity about how to get from here to there. And that's the job of organizing. But I would say you can't do that today unless you bring these groups together and start developing a common strategy and some beginning of a common organizational structure. Well, okay, I've had my say on that. What do you think?
Well, I would say that, you know, I agree that there definitely needs to be common strategy, a common vision. What I do see is that that's already largely happened. So Occupy, one of the things it did is it created some networks, and those networks have continued to go on, and people around the country are having gatherings, are continuing to communicate with each other. We've been to an organized strategy retreats that have brought together people from different areas of the country, different areas of advocacy to work together, and this common vision already pretty much is out there. I mean, people learned through Occupy, which made it very visible, the things that Kevin outlined, the fact that the economy is rigged against us and for the corporations, the tremendous amount of corruption in our political process, and, you know, Wall Street greed, and this, you know, growing wealth divide. And you can't have a democracy of any sort in a wealth divide such as we have, because there's way too many haves. The ones who have the haves have way too much, and the rest of us have way too little.
Well, that's a critique of conditions, and people know that. How do you get from this awareness that everything's screwed up to another vision? I mean, strategy is about how you get from here to there, right?
Well,
are you telling me these groups are getting together and talking about how you get from here to there?
Yes.
Already?
Yes.
Okay,
and
well,
so
then
that
suggests we're at the stage of maybe we need to come together in some national conference and take it to a national level.
Well, I mean, if you have the resources to do that, great. But I see this happening already, even despite that. And what's interesting, you know, we talk about the two-track approach, and that's not new. I mean, throughout history, there were others that had the similar kind of approach of protesting the things that you need to stop, creating alternative systems to replace what you have that's not functioning. That, you know, that's something that Gandhi as well, and, you know, you saw it during the civil rights movement as well. What's interesting is that these things are happening. So the new economy is one where people want to have more control. It's more of what's called a democratized economy, where it reduces the wealth divide. People have more benefit from the resources from the Commonwealth and more control over it. So we're seeing, you know, growth of worker cooperatives, worker-owned cooperatives, of people switching to credit unions and community banks, of cities beginning to take up participatory budgeting. The public banking movement is growing. People are pushing for, you know, municipalization of their energy and moving to renewable sources of energy. They're finding ways to develop food security in their own community.
Isn't that still single-issue politics at a local level, though?
No, I think it's all very, very much connected, because we're seeing it happening all around the country, the same thing in various communities. And the more, and that's kind of one of the many goals of popular resistance, was to help people see this so they could learn from what's happening in other communities and get resources to find out, well, how do I make that happen in my community? And so a lot of groups are already kind of organically doing that. What I wanted to speak to quickly was, you know, your comments about the electoral process. Because while it is exciting to see as part of this shift that's happening in the country, that there are, you know, it's great to see some labor groups moving away from the Democrats. I really wish that more labor would do that, but I'm not going to hold my breath on that one.
Me neither, you know, by the way.
Yeah, to see Kashama Sawant elected a socialist in Seattle is tremendous. But the political system, one, is still very much rigged against us. So it's great when there are those wins at the local level, if people really think they're going to be able to change things locally through that political process. I say that that's a good way to go. But we need to get away from that short-sighted thinking of one election to the next, because that's been used to really manipulate people and hold people back for a long time. It's just,
great,
you know, if I elect
great.
The right person, things will be changed. It's not about electing the right person. It's never about electing the right person. It's about what the movement does, what the people use with their power. We're much stronger than whoever's in office.
But
and
doesn't
so
at some point a movement have to take a shot at taking over the institutions of political power?
Think about the moments where that didn't happen and still there was change. Look at Nixon. He was like a horrible right-wing president, corrupt, corporate, pro-war, anti-communist, you know, didn't care about the environment. He's terrible. But on the other hand, he ended the Vietnam War. He started, opened the EPA, opened up OSHA, you know, Occupational Safety and Health Administration. He helped to update the Clean Air and Clean Water Act. He opened the doors of China. He negotiated arms reduction with Russia and the Soviet Union. I mean, so even a lousy person in office, if there is a movement, even a lousy person can get pushed. Now, if you get a decent person in office, let's take FDR during the New Deal. You know, he was able to enact a New Deal program, which came out of the Communist Party, the Socialist Party, the Progressive Party. That was their plan. And because there was a movement, an economic opportunity with the crisis, you know, he was able to put those programs into place. But without the movement,
I'm not making an argument against movement. Kevin, I'm not making an argument against movement.
No, I know.
All
I'm saying is the movement
totally.
Is more important. I'm not against electoral either. That's why we're part of the Green Shadow.
That's
why we're trying
foundation.
To show an alternative reality on the electoral front. Of course, we're not against elections, but we don't want to, you know, I think that the Wisconsin example you gave was a really good one. It's very easy to be diverted away from the primary task, which is building a national
If you don't have an independent political party, it is, yes. Then if people only
especially
see
then,
Democrats,
that's, right.
That's where they're easily diverted
I agree.
To.
Yeah, that's making it harder.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I think out of the movement will come. In fact, you mentioned the socialist candidate, Sawant, in Seattle. She was in the Occupy movement. I think the movement will create those kinds of electoral
spontaneously?
Activists. We have to support them.
You think that'll occur spontaneously, or does
well,
it...
Well, not spontaneously, but I think there'll be people like... I know, for example, we were just talking to some people in Colorado the other day, and there's the whole Occupy Denver wants to run electorally. And so they're all, you know, running Greens, what they're planning on doing, but they're organizing to run a slate of candidates. And so I think a lot of people are thinking the same way we are, talking about these issues. I know in Baltimore... There are various groups who are talking about what they can do in Baltimore politically, electorally, I mean, to retake. So people are talking about that. So I think it will come out of the movement, but the movement is first. Everything
Absolutely.
Flows
the movement
from
is
the
first.
Movement.
You know, I'm an absolutely opposed myself to any top-down kind of idea of creating intellectuals, creating a party and say, okay, folks, come to us. You know, that's nonsense.
Exactly.
It has to come out of the movement itself, but at some point the movement has to come together, and the movement has to realize it needs some organization, and the movement has to attack the institutions of power. It has to penetrate.
That's right.
That's difficult,
right.
And
that's why I mentioned when I said the strategy of building the movement is pulling people from the power structure to the movement. We ought to strengthen ourselves and weaken them at the same time.
It must
so
be
that's attacking
truly,
the power structure.
It must be truly independent of the two
yes,
wings of the one
so
political party. Truly
so
independent. And that has to be a hard, fast dividing line.
And that's the problem that's the problem I see in North Carolina with the moral march. That didn't seem independent to me. That seemed like it was a Democratic Party funded pep rally for the Democrats. I'm afraid that may not be what it seems.
No, I don't. I think you're wrong there. I think that's a true grassroots movement. That doesn't mean that you don't have people trying to co-opt it and
there are people that came in from a lot of different states. Who paid for the buses? Who paid for the stage and the sound system? That money didn't come from the grassroots in North Carolina. That came from Democrat Party unions, that came from the NAACP, which is a Democrat Party tied group. I'm sure they got funding from Democrat Party donors. I think you're wrong. I think it looks like a movement, but it's not. I think we're going to see this as an electoral effort. And that's understandable. The North Carolina Republicans have been horrible. I mean, they've been anti-democratic, they've been racist, they've been anti-immigrant, they've been terrible. But I just don't think that is what it looks like.
No, I'm going to disagree with that because I've talked to people there. You know, it's based on the churches, and it's based on the communities.
Well, Washington State.
There's a strong community groups and church groups and some labor, independent labor, not the unions themselves, not the FLCIO.
I know it's
so
more
important.
True for the Moral Mondays movement, but this march that just happened this last week, was totally focused on the Democrats versus Republicans.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, we would make a distinction between Moral Monday's movement and the attempt to broaden it.
And this march that just happened.
Other elements. And yes, the Democrats will always, when they see a grassroots movement of some significance, will attempt to
co-opt it
and say, vote for me. You know, and that's the big danger. That's why there has to be a hard, fast line in terms of independent politics.
And that's why one of the keys for our success is political education. You know, we talked about trainings all over the country. Part of that training is political education. People understand that this is a dynamic that we see over and over again. The Democratic Party coming in, trying to co-opt the movement. They did that with Occupy, you know. You may remember the 99% spring. All these Democrat Party groups tried to get the Occupy energy to support the Obama campaign.
Sure.
And it didn't work, but they tried.
Yeah, and of course, that's as Labor runs its independent candidates at a local level, that pressure will always be there. But I agree with you. Then people have to realize that either wing of these two parties, which are owned and controlled and run now more than ever before, well, Republicans always were, but the Democrats since the late 80s with the Democratic Leadership Conference, which is the Democratic Party now, the corporate wing, you cannot reform that party. Party is, you know, even though there are good people on the very far left of that party, they're getting more and more marginalized. And when you really speak out like Dennis Kucinich, you know, they gerrymander you away. You cannot reform from within. I am not a proponent of reforming the Democrats from within. It's totally impossible because of the corporate control of that, and there has to be something totally independent of that. I'm just saying that I think, I'm playing devil's advocate here, that we may be approaching a point, maybe we're not there yet, where all these diverse movements, which are growing, need to somehow begin developing coordinated, more centralization and more coordination, and begin thinking about local political initiatives. Okay. Well, stimulating conversation, as always, with both of you. And any final comment before the music rises here and they tell us that we've really got to get off? Any final comment, Margaret?
Sure, yeah. I would really encourage your listeners to go and visit popularresistance.org to see how much is going on and check out the strategy there, and also, use the tools to start organizing and getting active in your own community.
Okay, popularresistance.org. Go look at it, folks, and keep up with what's happening. Kevin?
Thanks a lot, Jack.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming out. We'll talk to you again, and hopefully next time we can talk a little bit more about a national organizing convention. Okay. Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. Next week, we'll talk about what's happening in China.